this retreat and this weakness from the part of the United States is not something that is not clear. We have two reasons, two evidences. We can see in Venezuela, for example, Venezuela, which is a neighbor of the United States, and you have Latin America. All of the United States had tried to take down the government in Venezuela. They even had brought in another alternative and a substitute. They enforced a blockade and sanctions on Venezuela. And they even reached a state that the Venezuelan currency is worse than even the Lebanese currency right now. And despite all these sufferings, despite all of this, Venezuela remains steadfast as a political government and the people, and the U.S. retreated and stood back. And this is a very clear issue. Another issue that also caused an earthquake in our region, and that led to all of these transformations that you are witnessing today. And one of the main factors of this transformation is the U.S. Defeat in Afghanistan after more than 20 years of fighting and big numbers of troops and generals, billions of dollars, a high number of losses, high the cost. Then the United States just leaves Afghanistan and presents it to the Taliban movement without any conditions, unconditionally. This is a defeat. This U.S. defeat, and of course with the U.S., also with the entity, it's the same. We can talk about Netanyahu as well. He runs away from his responsibilities and his duties. He throws it on Lapid. Also, just a few days ago, we can see that the current U.S. administration is also throwing the reason of the fact that they were defeated and withdrew from Afghanistan. Only they threw it at Trump, and they would, of course, accuse each other of being responsible for that defeat. Of course, the defeat in Afghanistan, the U.S. defeat in Afghanistan, had a huge impact on the region. This will not show in 1-2 years. Perhaps it needs several years, and we can see this also showing right now. And we can see it, of course, in Afghanistan. We can see that there were even the fact that it wasn't the United States that was as saddened for this issue as the Zionists were, and they were extremely sad. And you can see the strategy experts in the Zionist regime about the repercussions of this withdrawal, the U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan, also in the Persian Gulf Arab states. And this is information. This is information that some even authorities, those in authority in the Persian Gulf Arab states, told us through canals, of course, that they are all convinced, all the countries in the region are convinced, and you, Israel, needs to hold this conviction as well, that we cannot even completely bargain on the U.S. to assist this country in that country, to strengthen this country or that country. We cannot depend and have trust in the U.S. The U.S. is looking for its interests. It does not care about other interests. When it has an interest in retreating, it does let go and forsake its allies. It did that in Afghanistan. And before that, it did that in Vietnam in most heinous forms of retreat, and this is one very significant earthquake, of course, on the level of the Arab states. It's very significant. It led to a conviction that the main reason for stability in the Gulf and in West Asia would not be for this. It would not be as a result of the presence of foreign troops, but would be actually the foreign troops would be the reason behind instability. But cooperation, dialogue, meeting, gathering would be the main way and path for stability. And also retreat of the Arab. And also the fact that the United States is busy in other areas, in other places. Its priority is no longer West Asia or the Middle East. And the United States, U.S., the U.S. administration does not care anymore about what is happening in the region. They have more important issues to that concerns them. We have the confrontation with Russia, the Russian-Ukrainian war, the proxy NATO war with against Russia, and also the conflict with China. This is not a war, but could escalate into a war. God knows. When it comes to what is happening in Taiwan, for example. And those developments, these are issues that concern the U.S., and they are more significant. And this is something that also concerns the Zionists. I am following up what the Zionist experts are saying, what the analysts are saying. They are saying that this concerns us. This is a very concerning issue, and this would have an impact on the Zionist entity. And that our priority is China, Taiwan, Russia. They have said this, and this would also even lessen the fact that they would put more pressure on Iran. This would lead to the fact that the country, that the world would become multipolarized, and the fact that this would push the United States to not giving any support, whether it comes to the economic support, political support. When we see a retreat in the U.S. forces, when the U.S. is busy with other priorities, when the U.S. is no longer an only force in the world, then this would lead strategic transformations and changes when it comes to the Zionist entity. And one of the main reasons for the turns that was present for and the strength and superiority of military superior presence of the Israeli army is the fact that they had a lot of support from the United States. Of course, they continue to lie to their people. For example, on the issue of normalization of ties with some Arab states and Muslim states, the Israeli leaders had considered that this is their achievement, that is their diplomatic efforts, and so on. These are all lies. This is all because of U.S. pressure on those Arab states. This is a demand from the U.S. states to the Arab countries to normalize ties and to go to agreements with the Israelis. Of course, we all know the U.S. envoys that go to Indonesia. Where is Indonesia? Where is Palestine? What does it have to do with normalization of ties? And then they have even official stances. I'm not giving here an analysis. There are statements that we saw that this U.S. envoy met with the Indonesian government or the foreign policy. And they discussed holding normalized relations with the Zionist entity. And so, therefore, this is just clear. These are facts. And then if this support for the Zionist entity is retreats, and therefore even the power and capabilities of the Israeli and army and military power will be weakened. This will have good impact on the resistance, but it would have a negative impact on the Zionist regime. In the region, the fact that the resistance bloc, with its people, with its factions, with its countries, had come out of a crisis after 10, 12 years. There was a global war against the resistance on various forms, a war that was monitored by the United States. It was managed and controlled and planned by the United States, and they were using countries. They were using terrorist organizations. They were using other groups, criminal armed groups, in various forms, wars, sanctions, soft war, psychological war, defamation, also forms of war that would enforce upon the resistance. Today, the resistance, with its governments, its factions, its people, have come out of this crisis at a level where they are very strong. I cannot say that we have completely come out of this crisis, but we are still strong, we are steadfast, we are present on the fronts, and this is what we see on various fronts as well for the resistance, and this is very significant when it comes to the history of the confrontation with Israel. All those plans, all those years were only to destroy the infrastructure of the resistance. All support for Palestine and Al-Quds, all forms of support and funding for Palestine from the United the Islamic Republic of Iran, from Lebanon, from Syria, from Iraq, and all this was at a loss. All of this failed in the transformations and the developments in the region. We can see the developments in Syria are very significant when we see that Syria is rebuilding itself, is rehabilitating, and the fact that there are continues to be some files that need to be, of course, fixed. The fact that we have a return of diplomatic ties with many Arab countries, Algeria, Tunisia, the Emirates, and also the fact that there is even talks of opening consuls from Saudi Arabia and so on and so forth. The fact that Syria is back to the Arab League, although this is not the very significant point, the important point is that there are renewed ties, normalized political, diplomatic ties between the Arab states and Syria. That is the main issue here, the main significant factor. Even on the Turkish issue, Turkey is also very open and wants to meet and wants to speak, wants to hold dialogue, even in Damascus. It is the Syrian government that is putting conditions, and which is normal. And this has to do with the main issue of the Turkish occupation in Syria. And these are significant transformations in Syria, with the fact that there continues to be a seizure act enforced upon Syria and so on. And this is something that we are all suffering from. And by the way, it is not only the resistance factions, but it is many people in the world that are also suffering as a result of U.S. actions. In Yemen as well, in Yemen, whom we were with from the first day of the war against them, we can also see a reflection of everything that's happening in the region. We say that today, for example, a blessed day where there was a prisoner swap for the sake of the Yemenis, and everything that comes from Yemen, from Saudi Arabia. And this, of course, Saudi Arabia is a party in this war. It was part and parcel of the war against Yemen, the Saudi Arabia and Emirates and other Arab states, although the main decision was made by the United States. The contact, the meetings, all of these are calling for accord, they're calling for good, they're calling for dialogue. This is very significant for us. We can see today that whoever is supporting and going towards stopping wars, towards political solution for the issue in Yemen, is a side that is very significant. It's not talking about a state side that needs to give pretext or reasons why they're going for this, whether it is the courageous government, which has proven its presence and its strength, which is mainly represented by the leader, Sayyid Abdel Malik Badreddin al-Houthi. May God keep him, may God protect him. Those, from the first day, the Yemenis had always been saying they were defending their people, they're defending their nation. They had always called for stopping war. Those who were in solidarity with them were us. We were the ones who were with them from the first night. We were calling for a ceasing of the wars. We were calling for everyone to stop the wars. In all our speeches and all our calls, we always said and denounced the war and said that the war needs to stop. When issues are going towards coming to stop the war, this is something that goes by our standards. And those who want to say they want to give reasons why they're going for this are the sides that put very high stances and high achievements and high objectives. They could not achieve any of those objectives in Yemen or anywhere else. Today, hopefully, if God willing, this does happen, and we have a political solution in Yemen, then therefore this is very significant for Palestine, for Al-Quds, and for the region. The fact that Algeria has come back very strongly to the Arab sphere and to the Palestinian cause and become a very significant player in this issue, and what they did in the last league meeting in the Arab League, and they even removed the African summit. They even called for the fact that the Zionist representatives need to be removed. And when we see that this is part of also the rehabilitation and what it has from all the forces and capabilities and clerics and people and factions of the resistance here today in the region. We are in those countries that have the factions of resistance. We are the ones that surround Al-Maqdis. We are the ones that surround Al-Quds today. We tell our people in Iraq, we hold so much hope in you, and Iraq is on its way to rehabilitate, to be stronger, and we have even bet on Iraq, on its capability, and its people, and civilization, and its history. They have human resources and human capabilities that can be added to the strength. And if they do add this to a very significant active role in the resistance front, then this will change so many issues in the region. Iran, its steadfastness, its development, its advanced capabilities, and the fact that is very strong in the equations in the region and the international sphere, which have even surmounted the sanctions and any calls for blocking and isolation. The Saudi-Iranian dialogue and its impact on the region, which have begun even faster, to have an impact even faster than anyone had expected in more than one sphere, in more than one front, and we hope that it could reach Lebanon as well. This development in the region, which is definitely, it has very significant impacts on the issue of the normalization of ties with Israel. For us, it will be positive, but for the Zionists, it will be negative. We will at least see a weakening in the path of normalization, or would at least stop its pace and stop moving forward and stop it at a certain limit. And this would end perhaps this call for this corrupt and criminal Zionist cabinet. Today, in light of the developments in the region, we have seen that we can close the door to any and end any of the bargains that the Zionist enemy had tried to take as an issue to depend on. They had said that they will create a certain Israeli-Arab front or an axis that is part of an Israeli-Arab issue. But of course, they even wanted to say something else, which is not true, because our Sunni brothers are not as such, because it is our Sunni brothers who are fighting in Al-Quds, in the West Bank, in Gaza, and in Palestine. But the Israelis have been using the slogan of creating an Israeli-Sunni front facing Iran and its allies. This issue has collapsed completely. Any call or any bargain on an Israeli-Arab axis has collapsed. Anything that they said was a so-called possible Israeli-Sunni axis has also collapsed, and they have even failed in many of their bargains and other issues related to their normalization. First, the bargain. And the fact that they would launch wars and use the Arab states, specifically the Persian Gulf Arab states, against Iran, that there would be perhaps a U.S. war and aggression, which would be supported by Arab states, had also collapsed and failed. Why do they want to focus on Iran? Because the entire world, and Israel knows this specifically, that the main supportive ground, the main backing side for all the countries and the movements of the resistance is the Islamic Republic of Iran by the leadership of the Supreme Leader Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, God protect him. And therefore, this is why they have put all their focus on Iran, sanctions against Iran, a war against Iran, creating new axes facing Iran. All of these issues are very significant transformations and developments that would serve the resistance front. On the other levels that we see, for example, the various at the entities level, In brief, some people would say in Lebanon, in other places, they do not understand the significance of what is happening inside the Zionist regime. What are they differing on? Is it just issue that has to do with constitution or the judicial system? But this had actually represented all the issues in their society, whether it is ethical, ethnic, or racial, or psychological, or mental. We heard this from the head of the president of the former president of the Zionist regime. He spoke about such fears years ago. Those amendments in the judicial system have taken on and opened up to the various problems and rifts and differences that are very much entrenched in this regime. And we could say that only a few sentences. This is a war. This is a war that would lead, without blood, without war, this would be a war launched by Netanyahu and the extremist group with him against all other political factions by using their own constitution and their own political standards. This would be a war to reach to a certain a so-called dictatorship, which is an issue that needs to be discussed, of course, but this is an existential war between the Zionists themselves and could lead to blood and civil war. And it had been possible that last week, only recently, they could have reached the level of civil war among them had it not been for the intervention of the United States of America. The United States knows that they could not go to a civil war. It could not allow the Zionist entity, the Zionist regime, to begin a civil war. But they tried. They put all their efforts, and this is one of the reasons why there were so many meetings and visits by the National Security Advisor, the Secretary of State, the Chief of Staff, the U.S. Chief of Staff. They all went back and forth to this entity because there is a real problem. There's a crisis, and this issue has extended to all of the society of the Zionist regime, whether at the popular level or the media level or the political factions or the elites. Even it had reached even the businessmen and commerce and has threatened their work as well, and even has reached the army and its troops and even the reserve forces. And we will see that this rift will be the beginning of many other rifts as well. And we will add this to all the other issues that we had in the past years, the fact that there was no confidence in the leadership, a lack of confidence in the army. This is very significant. And we continue to see more lack of weakness in the confidence of their military in Israel, and the fact that they have no deterrence power facing the resistance forces. And I will come back to this when I want to come and talk about the Lebanese issue and the rockets from South Lebanon. The fact that we see a retreat, that this is very dangerous, a retreat in the morale and the readiness to fight and the readiness to even sacrifice for the sake of the existence of this regime. And this is something where we see also, they always say that they are not ready, that the Southern Front is not ready, that they cannot accept and bear any sacrifices, they cannot bear any loss, they cannot bear any issues, any cost. And this is all at the level of the troops, the army as a whole, and even the fighting units of the reserve as well. Many also threaten that they will remove their investments from the regime. Many are thinking about leaving because they were promised security and stability and the land of honey and milk, but it is the land of hatred and blood. And they are looking for another citizenship for those who do not have another citizenship. And they're looking for another passport. Those who do not have another passport, they're looking for another passport. And these are very significant transformations and developments. We're talking about the internal issue. This also goes in parallel with the fact that the Palestinian people are steadfast, and the fact that we have the shield of Al-Quds, and we have the guards in Al-Quds, and we have the West Bank, and so on. So this is an accelerated issue. This is an issue that has been added up from the in the last 50 years, what is happening in the West Bank, what is happening in Al-Quds, what is happening in Palestine, the fact that you have so many young men, the lions that are even individually working alone, the heroic stances, the fact that they do not have the capabilities. You can see the Palestinian in Jenin and Nablus and the camps in other cities, they are fighting with very modest arms and guns, with an army that has the strongest air force in the region. The Al-Quds, the people of Al-Quds, the West Bank, the people of Al-West Bank, the men, the women, the young, the children, the elderly, they are all presenting the highest of all, the most beautiful image of steadfastness, of readiness, of the readiness to sacrifice, martyrdom, of the fact that they have pride in their martyrs, in supportive ground of the resistance and the choice of the resistance, the guards of Al-Quds, who throughout the last days and the months, so we salute them. We say that we are honored by the people of Al-Quds, despite everything that happened with them, all the aggression, all this hatred against them and the assaults. The fact that they continue to come and be present in Al-Aqsa Mosque, despite all the sufferings, despite all the problems, the fact that the resistance in Gaza is gaining ground, the fact that the Palestinian people have taken on the decision of resistance, the choice of resistance, more than ever time ever before. They have always been, of course, they had always been taking this issue. We're not talking about so-called Oslo Accord or negotiations, Palestinian and Israeli talks, or any sort of so-called Mideast talks. We're all the talk is about resistance, martyrs, Al-Aqsa Mosque, the Church of Resurrection, the mothers of the martyrs, the great mothers of martyrs, the fact that you see the daily funerals of the martyrs in Palestine. This is what we're hearing in all positions and all the media and all the spheres. And this is a very significant transformation in the level of the confrontation, the conflict with the Zionist enemy. And in light of all of these developments, I want to speak about some details. What happened just recently in South Lebanon, because we need to, of course, see what, after these details, what is our duty? What happened just recently in South Lebanon? Of course, this was a very significant development. This was an issue that you see in light of everything that happened since the year 2006. Of course, it is unprecedented. I did not speak last week because, honestly, I needed to study and to consult some of my brothers, and therefore we believe that the fact that Hezbollah, of course, has taken this policy, and the resistance in Lebanon has taken this policy also in this issue specifically, the fact that we have a policy of silence, this is part of the management of the war facing the enemy. Therefore, we do not need to go and answer any questions or to give any details, details that the Israeli enemy themselves, they are perplexed with and they are confused about. And this is something that would probably confuse the friends as well. But concerning the concern of our friend, first, the friend should say that their concern is part of the sacrifice in this battle. And the concern of our friends would be something that is so we can solve away from the fact that there needs to be concern for the enemy. The concern of the enemy needs to remain. And this is what one of the fruits of what happened last week. And now the enemy needs to remain in a state of fear. They need to remain in a state of terror. They need to remain in a state of fear. No one should give them any sort of guarantees because they are the aggressors. They are the aggressors. They are the ones who are launching aggressions and assaulting the Palestinian people on a daily basis. They are the ones who launched this criminal act on the worshippers in Al-Aqsa Mosque. They are the ones who committed all of these crimes. They are the ones who are threatening the entire region. They are the ones who are launching an aggression against Syria, maybe on a daily basis or every week, but every day they assault the Palestinians on a daily basis. They threaten the Lebanese people. Why should we give them guarantees? Why should we give them any sort of reason to be at ease? Even the government in Lebanon, even the political factions in Lebanon, The enemy needs to remain in a state of confusion, and they need to remain in a state of terror and fear and concern. They need to be concerned. This is what also strengthens this deterrence power and the power of deterring this enemy and the rules of conduct which have protected Lebanon since the year 2000 until today and have enforced upon the enemy with their continuous admittance that they have admitted that they have retreated and they would allow Lebanon to give them the right which the Lebanese government had also called for in their demarcation of the maritime borders and their natural resources of petrol and gas. This is part of the equation of deterrence, which we need to preserve, we need to keep, which has also proven itself last week. And this is Israel. This is Israel that you know. The Lebanese people know Israel. People of the region know Israel. We all remember before 1982, from 1982 until the year 2000, how the Israelis used to act. How did this regime used to act when we had one single rocket against its settlement? And last week, how did they act? How did they respond? Some of those inside Lebanon are actually discussing this issue. Can they please give us a reason? Let us give us a response. Here we're talking about military standards. Why did the Israelis act as such? Is it because of the Security Council, the United Nations, that they respect the Arab regimes? Of course, no one said this. They do not dare to say this. This is silly talk. This is very foolish. We do not need any change. The Israelis themselves admit that the deterrence power is what has made their retaliation, the response, very limited and very weak. And this is a very significant issue that happened last week. See where we have become, where we were and where we are right now. I have followed up everything that the Zionists have said. The Israelis have, whether in their cabinet, their security cabinet and the authorities, لقد حققنا هدفا مهما وهو أننا استطعنا أن نحيد حزب الله عن المعركة في جنوب لبنان يعني لما نحن ما ودينا على القصف اللي عملوا طب هو إنجاز إنه خلينا نحيد لبنان خلينا نحيد المقاوم بلبنان وهن ماكلين قتل الجماعة هذا يجب أن يقرأ
Everything that the Israelis said, the security cabinet, the meeting, we need to study this at the level of the strategic level. But in any case, if we see Israel after the launching of rockets, they say, they have achieved a very significant issue that they were able to not drag Hezbollah into this confrontation. So they say that they consider that Hezbollah, that it is an achievement in itself if Hezbollah does not respond, does not retaliate. Let us keep Lebanon aside. They have already been slapped in the face by the Palestinians. This is an issue that we need to read strategically. This has not to do with the details of our political situation in Lebanon. Concerning what happened, this is one comment, first of all, and also concerning what happened. Netanyahu had even claimed, put certain false claims, and we need to respond to this as well. And one of the basic lies that he also declared was that they hit the infrastructure in South Lebanon for Hezbollah and the movement of Hamas. Didn't he say that? Okay. This is a lie that is very clear. All the media went and filmed, and they visited the areas that were shelled by the Israelis. Some of them you had banana trees and even fresh water supplies and open areas. There's no infrastructure for Hezbollah that was launched, that was shelled, or even infrastructure for Hamas that was shelled, because the Israelis had said that no, we did not hit Hezbollah. No, we just hit Hezbollah. We just hit Hamas areas and posts. No, they did not launch any attack on any certain military base, or they launched a shelling against bananas and banana trees. Of course, last week I was hesitant on speaking as such, because some people were saying, I even considered that let's let this pass, and we will let this pass, and let's not provoke the Israelis and tell them, see, that you cannot do anything, you are weak. Yes, of course, we could probably be provoking them as such, but when we see that we need to preserve the deterrence power, it is not important what the Israelis think, or that they feel that they were insulted, or that they feel that they were provoked. But they come and they lie to us, they lie to our people. Let him lie to his own people. But he lied to his people very clearly, and he knows, his army knows, his ministers know, and everyone in that regime knows that this issue did not happen in South Lebanon last week. You can see how weak he is now, and how the fact that he is very foolish to the extent that he needs to lie, a very open lie that everyone knows is a lie. And another important thing that Netanyahu said was that he admitted that Israel is weaker when it comes to its deterrence power, especially in Lebanon, and has promised that they would rehabilitate their deterrence power. But he said, we need time. He said, I need long time, and he will not be able, God willing, to do anything about this. And he threw the responsibility on the previous cabinet. This is another also lie when he said that Lapid had signed an agreement with Hezbollah. And everyone in the entity, in the regime, and in Lebanon know that Lapid did not even sign any agreement with Hezbollah. This so-called talk about an agreement and the demarcation of the borders is something that everyone knows its details, the details of. We do not need to talk about this right now, but I will end my talk about this, because just last night we ended the Al-Qadr worship, and then they said that there was a meeting, there was an interview for Netanyahu, who was threatening and claiming and so on. He was even threatening me personally, and he said that I will see. He was telling me that Sayyid Nasrallah will see. He began like this. Okay, he's saying we'll see, and now we tell them as well that in the resistance in Lebanon, we tell him, you'll see, and we will all see, and the days will prove. The enemy needs to know that all of these threats that they are sending towards Lebanon, the resistance in Lebanon, will not reach anywhere, and they will not have an impact on us at all. This would only add us more strength and resilience and steadfastness and determination to reach and anything that would protect Lebanon, to strengthen the deterrence power, to protect Lebanon, and to stop any aggression that would be targeting anyone in Lebanon without any hesitation. Whether Lebanese, Palestinian, Iranian, Syrian, anyone who lives in Lebanon, any inhabitant on Lebanon or a guest in Lebanon, perhaps now my team might think that perhaps there would be a security war, that I would not go to a military action, but there would be a security issue. Let us open this very clearly. Let's have things very clear. Okay, perhaps they won't launch a military escalation. They would probably move away the Lebanese people, not touch the Hezbollah personalities, but they will go to Hamas. Any action that targets anyone in Lebanon, we will retaliate based on the level, on the level or the time that is suitable, that we find suitable. Let me come to the last part of my speech, or before the last part, on the issue of Syria. And although this issue requires longer time, but I will only give a few words. The continuous aggressions against Syria, of course, they had always put a question. We had always posed the question. Let us answer this question on Al-Quds Day, because I want to volunteer and give you a reply, because especially since this question is always sent to Syria as a government, a military army, and even the resistance front. When it comes to the issue of Syria, why doesn't Syria retaliate to the continuous aggressions? This is an issue that, of course, is very studied very meticulously by the Syrian government, the Syrian army. The Syrian army is deployed on the fronts for hundreds of kilometers from the point of the borders, Syrian, Iraqi, Al-Kamal, Al-Mayadin, Deir ez-Zor. We go from even to the Euphrates, and we reach eastern Aleppo, western Aleppo, until we go to the borders with Idlib to the Latakia mountains. And when there is a government, when there is an army, they are deployed on those in all that sphere. They are busy in that sphere also. It's true that there are no fire and so on, but there are certain clashes, but there could be fighting any time. And any development can be taken advantage of, but whether Israeli, Syrian, that can then other groups, terrorist groups, can take advantage of this in order to invade those lands or to violate those lands. And they cannot allow the army. They cannot go to more than one front. However, the Syrian Defense Forces are facing the aggression, and we even see martyrs and wounded. But what I want to say today is that this issue will not continue for long. And this is what I wanted to also warn the Israeli enemy of. Even when it comes to the level of Syrian response itself, this could develop. At any moment, this could change, whether it comes to the transformation of the region, the global issues, international issues, based on some maybe developments within the Zionist regime itself. The Zionist regime should not be at ease and say, okay, this is a cost that I will not pay. I mean, in Syria, they can always avenge and send their revenge to Syria, and that Syria will not respond. This could be something that is miscalculated and not accurate. What happened in the last few weeks at the level of some of the drones and the rockets in Syria is an indicator that there are possibilities that we see retaliation from Syria. I want to warn the enemy of not thinking of such as they are thinking right now when it comes to the front with Syria. What the Israeli enemy is claiming, a certain war, a battle among between the wars in Syria from the year 2018 until today, they have not achieved any of their goals. There are failed goals, and its cost is very high on the Israeli. There's material loss in Syria. It's true, there are martyrs and so on, but the objective of the Israelis has failed in Syria. And some people in the region, especially in Lebanon, they come and they claim that, as for example, Al-Aqsa Mosque, they come and they tell us, see, they are launching an aggression against Syria. What did you do in Lebanon? If we don't do anything, then they say you didn't do anything. If we do something, then they say the resistance wants to drag Lebanon into a war, a regional war. So let these people hold their horses for a bit. This will not change anything when it comes to the decisions of the resistance front, or the leadership of the resistance front, or the strategies of the resistance front. The resistance front and its leadership are in agreement, and they are in constant state of coordination, and they have enough courage and wisdom to deal with the situation based on how suitable the situation and the response is. This is an issue that I could probably come back to at the end. The main duty at the end of my speech has to do with the West Bank and Al-Quds. We need to remind everyone that this is a duty of everyone, the Muslims, the Christians, the free people of the world. Everyone is threatened in Al-Aqsa Mosque and Al-Maqdis, and the Muslim and Christian holy sites. The Muslims and the Christians in the region, in Palestine and the region, are all threatened. The Israeli aggression, and even with the terrorist aggression that was controlled by the U.S. and supported by Israel. Everyone knows, everyone in Palestine and the Arab world, Muslim world, is threatened with the
الحفاظ على الضفة التي هي درع القدس، يعني دعمها، يعني مساندتها. لنكن صريحين وواضحين، دعمها ليس فقط الدعم المعنوي والسياسي بالاحتفال وبالمسيرة وبالنشيدة، ده كله مطلوب ومهم، لكن دعمها بالمال، وهذا يجب أن نعمل له جميعا رغم كل الظروف المالية الصعبة التي نعيشها جميعا.
But it's support with money. We need to support the West Bank and Al-Quds with money despite all the harsh circumstances that we are living, all of us, the economic situation, financial situation. We need to support the people in the West Bank and Al-Quds. They are living dire social and economic circumstances that are much more worse than any of our situation in the region. Therefore, in order for the people in the West Bank and Al-Quds to remain supportive for the resistance, to remain steadfast, the resistance needs to be supported with money and support with arms as well. All those who can give one arm, anyone who could transfer and bring arms to the West Bank, whether it is ours, us, or anyone else, anyone who can transfer arms and take arms to the West Bank needs to do this. Whoever cannot, then therefore this is not their problem. But they cannot say that, no, I cannot. They need to try. They need to strive. They need to work on this issue. This is a duty for everyone. Of course, this, the fact that the official and political support, the Islamic support, the Arab League, the Muslim League, and so on. The main slogan in Al-Quds, when I say the West Bank is the main shield of Al-Quds, therefore, this equals that we have a duty to support this West Bank with anything that would keep it strong, that would keep it resilient, would make it the maker of victories as well. This is first. And second of all, we need to warn the enemy. The enemy is playing, trying to play with all the fronts on the issue that here we have a front, we have a battle, we have a battle here, we have a battle there. This is a very significant point, very significant issue that I hope everyone would follow up with. And of course, some people would stop at this, because it's important. Now, what I care about is the enemy, what the enemy thinks, because this is a war with the enemy. The enemy, what are they doing? They are separating the fronts, trying to isolate the West Bank, isolate the Gaza, isolate Lebanon, isolate the guards in the Al-Aqsa Mosque. And they say that there are rules of conduct, and we have certain issues and the equilibriums here and there, and they would have a limit. I do not want to go to a war, but they have certain battles here and there. They are even saying that they have a concern that they are in fear. They are concerned. They do not want to go to a war. They should not give us this as a gift. But what is important is that I tell and the enemy that this is a dangerous game that you're playing. It is not always clear that you will be capable of holding the strings of this game, not in Al-Aqsa Mosque or the Church of Resurrection or the Al-Quds or the West Bank or Gaza or South Lebanon or Syria. Of course, I do not think that they are thinking towards any aggression against Iran, because they are much weaker and much more cowardice to be able to even think about launching an aggression against Iran. Do not think, I'm telling the enemy, don't think that you are able to pull the strings here and there and not to go to a full war. What we need to say all together, we need to warn the Israeli enemy together that your calculations, your practices, and some of your aggressions, and some of your foolish actions in Al-Quds, or the West Bank, or Gaza, or in Lebanon, or Syria, would lead the region to a larger war. It's true that some people in Lebanon, so they do not become fearful and concerned.
لا سوريا تريد الذهاب إلى حرب ولا حتى قطاع غزة يريد الذهاب إلى حرب بالشكل السابق.
The main strategy for the resistance is that there needs to be popular resistance, a war of attrition, the front lines in the areas. This is what we have witnessed in the last decades, in all past decades. But the foolish actions of the enemy, the crimes of the enemy, could push the region into a war and could drag the region into a war if the government of the enemy are bargaining on the fact, on a certain idea, that they think that the region cannot go to a war, then they are mistaken. And this miscalculation would be part of what they are trying to do in the last weeks and months. Yes, the region, of course, no one can, on one level at least, on a certain level, in certain circumstances, can prohibit the launching of a major war. And this is why I warn once more, I warn the Israelis, the U.S. also, which is busy with China and Russia, I tell them, be careful. I warn you, the holy sites are a red line. The Muslim and Christian holy sites in Al-Maqdis and Al-Quds are a red line. And even the West Bank is a red line. The Palestinian people are a red line. And the regional equation, which we spoke about, and we are working on reiterating and strengthening, is what protects and will protect, God willing, these holy sites. On Al-Quds Day, we, from the southern suburbs of Beirut, from Lebanon, from the country, the Arab state, that created the victory with its own work, with its martyrs in the year 2000, and changed, created transformations and deterrence power in the year 2006. We declare once more with Imam Khomeini, with Imam Khamenei, with all the leaders, the Muslim leaders, Arab leaders, Palestinian leaders, the honorable people, the free people, the Christians, with everyone who bears this and supports this cause, that we are with them, that Palestine is our cause, that Al-Quds is our capital together, and that the holy sites in Al-Quds, and this is our holy sites all for all of us, and this we will not forsake. Palestine, as we had always said in the various difficult circumstances, when we saw that even the terrorist bombs in South Lebanon, in South Beirut, and in the Bekaa, when we have were at the highest level of the war against Syria, we said here in this very hall, we said that we will not forsake Palestine. We will not forsake the people of Palestine or the holy sites of the nation in Palestine. And this is our duty, this is our faith, and peace be upon you all. And God will only give victory to those who give him victory. We give God victory through bearing fruit and working on this issue. And God has always given us victory, and he will continue to give us victories in the future. May your efforts be blessed, and may peace be upon you.
That was live from the Lebanese capital, Beirut. Secretary General of Lebanon's Hezbollah resistance movement, Sayed Hassan Nasrallah, was making an address on Al-Quds Day. Let's quickly go over what was just said by Mr. Nasrallah. He said that Al-Quds Day is dedicated to all of Palestine and Muslim sanctities, and that it's a message to Palestinians that they are not alone. He added that the Israeli enemy is sending empty threats to others, but the resistance front is stronger than ever. He also added that the U.S. has grown weaker in past decades and has failed in executing its plots in recent years. The world, he mentioned, will be more multipolar as it grows, as the United States grows weaker, and steps are being taken to end the war on Yemen. Those steps are very significant for the region right now. The enemy's attempts to isolate Iran, he said, and create a coalition against it have also failed. He also added that Israeli officials have admitted that the regime's deterrence power has grown weak. In his closing statements, he mentioned that he warned the Israeli regime that its aggression against Syria will not go unpunished, and that the holy sites of Muslims and Christians in occupied Al-Quds are red lines. Those are the latest comments coming from the Secretary General of Lebanon's Hezbollah resistance movement, Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah. All right, I'm just now being told that we have Robert Fantine, author and journalist, joining us from Kitchener, Ontario, and also journalist and political commentator Sayyid Mohsen Abbas is joining us from Islamabad in continuation of our focus on International Quds Day, which we've been keeping a close eye on all day here on Press TV. Let's start off with Mr. Fantina in Kitchener, Ontario. Before we get to the recent comments made by Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah, let's get your perspective on the importance of a day such as Al-Quds Day. What kind of attention and awareness can this day bring to the Palestinian cause?
This day is very important for the Palestinians and for their cause. In Iran, millions of people apparently are marching, rallying in support of Palestinians. We have to remember that Iran and Saudi Arabia have just formed renewed alliances. This shows that Israel's desire to ignore the Palestinian cause, to sweep it under the rug and continue oppressing the Palestinians, is not going to be accepted by millions of people around the world, and certainly in Iran, a large and powerful country. But this is showing that the Palestinian cause is not lost. A few years ago, under President Donald Trump, the so-called Abraham Accords were signed, when a few Arab nations, established full diplomatic ties with Israel. This was seen as a betrayal, as it was, although the people of those countries did not support those actions. We're seeing this around the world. The people of many, many countries support the Palestinians, oppose Israeli apartheid, oppose the repressive and brutal actions that the Israelis perform against the or perpetrate against the people of Palestine. People in the world reject the crimes against humanity, the violations of international law that Israel perpetrates on a daily basis. And that message, through Quds Day and other actions, is starting to get to the government officials who can actually do something.
Sayyid Mohsen Abbas from Islamabad, welcome to the program. Let's get your perspective on the importance of Al-Quds Day. What message does this day harbor? As we were listening to the comments of Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah earlier, he said that this day sends a message that Palestinians are not alone. Their cause is not forgotten. Do you agree with that notion as well?
World to focus on the actual solution. Because since I sort of launched the Al-1979, some say that it was in opposition to the Israeli Jerusalem Day, which they started in May 1968, pushing for a total control on Jerusalem back then. What it's done is through that period, the Al-Quds Day has also witnessed everything from the BDS movement, led by largely sort of Western, perhaps even Jewish, soft Zionists, almost like a weird concoction of trying to divert people into a solution that never was. Then there was, of course, the two-state solution in Oslo, which was a complete red herring as well. And along with that, of course, we've seen all sorts of other efforts by the puppet Gulf Arab regimes to buy off Palestinians, and they've done that with money. They tried to divide the Palestinians' resistance up. You've had the likes of Mahmoud Abbas, who are openly puppets of the Israeli state and accepted capitulation long ago. So you saw huge problems within the Palestinian movement and a lack of focus on what the real purpose of the whole mission was. It was almost like Palestinians had been made to get so confused and diverted that they'd gone. And what we've had was people ultimately fighting for land with sticks and stones, if that. And a lot of it was just a movement that had fallen into disarray. Then along comes, of course, the resistance axis. And we see Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah, who's, you know, very modestly put across all the points that he has today. But actually, it began with Hezbollah movement, backed by the Islamic Republic of Iran and the resistance axis as a whole. And from 2006 onwards, the invincibility of Israel has been eroded, you know, not only in words or in politics, but actually practically on the ground, militarily, they no longer had that air of invincibility. And of course, this new sea change, it was encapsulated, I think, very much in the reemergence of the Palestinian movement in the March of Return. And I think that is the watershed in terms of the Palestinians and their focus. And since this March of Return, where they actually began to sacrifice genuinely and stood up even more powerfully, what we saw was Israel increasingly exposed. And that exposure has happened on a military level, with them being with their dome being not so